It's been a bad week. Just the worst. Sunday at 11 was the unveiling for Zane Jordan, whose fourth birthday would have been, I think, next month. As we were standing at the New Jewish Cemetery, our beautiful plot, I received word that Gene had died. I was grateful that I did see him the Friday previous, although we didn't talk. And now, I guess, capping the week, a horrible terror and murder event in Pittsburgh. That's just what I've been told. So last week at Zane's unveiling, I talked about the two bookends of our parsha as poles in life. We begin Vayera with an annunciation scene where three strangers come to Abraham and let him know that in a year, Isaac will be born. And the word Isaac, Yitzchak, is repeated in its different roots with various connotations of laughter and play, even inappropriate play. And the Haftarah also contains an annunciation scene, a scene of someone being visited by Elisha this time to announce that in a year she will have a child. And then at the end of the parasha is the Akedah, the binding of Isaac for slaughter, the sacrifice that Abraham is called to make of his favored one, when we see Isaac carrying the wood and being bound. And so at Zane's unveiling, I talked about the span between birth and a potential final sacrifice, the end, and how we hope that time will be long, although long or short, it's never enough. And we hope it will be filled with laughter, but we know that life is often filled with strife as well, understandably, immutably, validly. And then the question is begged, so what do we do with that time? And for the many of you who are here Tuesday morning, Gene did a lot. Gene made a lot of that time. And making sense of death, whether Zane's death before even 3 years or Gene's death just shy of 87, is nearly impossible. I was asked this week what my opinion is or what the Jewish opinion is, and to quote Sam Cooke, I don't know what's up there beyond the sky. I don't really know if there is life after this. I'm ambivalent or fearful of the answer. So the question for us as Jews has often been, what do we do with the time we have here? As the psalmist says, would it be 70 or even 80 years with force? What is the nature of our span here? What ought we do? Before I approach that, I just want to draw back a little to those annunciation scenes. Death is very hard to make sense of, tragic, difficult, even in the best of circumstances, where you have someone who had a full life of richness and family. And as I mentioned at one of the Shiva Minyan, if we imagine our deathbed and who will be sitting around it, though not at the moment of Gene's death, there were many people at his deathbed, at his bed. My mentor said it would be much harder to make sense of if there were people who were immortal. Like if 1 out of 10 people didn't die, that would be a much harder world to live in. Because it would reek of unfairness. And another person said to me this week that the finitude of our life means it has meaning. if we lived forever, it would have less meaning. I'm not sure I agree with that. But what is clear is that our lives are very different to the lives of the angels. There's a long debate among the sages if these three persons who visit, these three figures, let's call them, who visit Abraham and later the figure who visits Jacob and wrestles with Jacob, are angels or humans. Kind of an ambivalence there. It's mostly regarded that they are angels. And the Talmud suggests that they are the angels Michael, Michael, Gabriel, Gabriel, and Raphael. Michael, Michael, who is like God, comes to bring the joyous tidings of Isaac's birth. And Raphael, the one who heals, God's healer, comes to heal Abraham after his circumcision. And Gabriel is just there on his way to a more difficult duty of destroying Sodom and Gomorrah, the cities of the plain. So angels, it's sort of an interesting rhetorical question. Would you rather be a human or an angel? So as noted in that section from Talmud, angels are generally eternal. There are also ephemeral angels. Our angelology is really wonderful and a subject of would be a fun thing to teach about, but not today. But almost every angel has a single task. So the one I cite most often is Baradiel, Barad being the word for hail, El being God's name. Baradiel is the angel in charge of hail. Pretty dull life, but you get to live forever, so it's a trade-off. And in the Midrash, they talk about, I think they're intimating the relationship between the Haftarah and the Torah, connecting Elisha and his annunciation scene with the annunciation scene at the beginning of the Torah reading. And Elisha, I just double-checked this, says, at this time next year, you will have a child. And the angels say, we will be back. We will surely be here when you have a child. Difference being that a mortal can't predict where he or she will be in a year. An angel can make plans far ahead. Has anyone heard an elder person say, I don't even buy green bananas anymore? Did Gene say that? That sounds like something he would have said. Yeah. So the simple fact is, we aren't granted limitless resources. Frankly, not even in a synagogue or a business. You always have to make do with limited resources. But certainly the ultimate limit is the limit of our days, of which we are unaware. And even David begged to know, and it was refused to him. So to search out the lesson, the moral of the story of what we're supposed to do with this time, long or short though it may be, it is finite. Let's look to the middle of the parasha, the section on Sodom and Gomorrah, the cities of the plain. Now, our Christian contemporaries have often understood the flaws of Sodom to be, thus the etymology of the word, sodomy. Abrasive sexual relations, non-consenting relations, homosexual relations. That, I think, has never been our perception of what went wrong in Sodom. Starting with Ezekiel, even, as old as Ezekiel, it says, this was the sin of the sister Sodom, arrogance. She and her daughters had plenty of bread and untroubled tranquility, yet they did not support the poor or the needy, and that was an abomination, so I removed them. That their gravest transgression was avarice or selfishness or haughtiness or atomistic capitalism, according to several Midrashim, but the entire lack of any communitarian ethos. That's where we return to Gene. Gene, as Judith told me, was more likely to give than to save, even when money was tight. Would that I were so comfortable doing that. I know my charitable giving goes down when I feel my pennies pinched. And that's not the way the mitzvah is supposed to work. But when we think about Gene or even the Jordan family or others that we've known and loved over the course of my time here and long before I was here, what makes people memorable and meaningful and significant in the life of a community, in the life of the world, in their own lives, what ensures to an extent that there will be people sitting around their bedside at their last days is a connection, is being embedded, is being a part of something greater than themselves. Josiah Royce talks about the ethos of commitments. And the Tor, the 19th century legal scholar, one of the first of the significant modern legal scholars in Judaism, talks about the laws of tzedakah, the laws of charitable giving, and it says a person should not ask, maybe Gene knew this one, how can I spare my money to give to poor people? Because he or she should know that the money is not theirs, but rather only a deposit with which to do the will of the depositor, God, which is to distribute some of the deposit to the poor. Charity, both in its immediate material sense, in the sense of dollars and coins, dollars and cents, but also the broader contribution one would have to things and causes beyond oneself. Royce calls it actually the theory, the philosophy of loyalties. And the ways in which we, even if we don't know what's out there beyond the sky, and even if we don't know, surely don't know how many years and days and months we will own, we will have alive, how many days God has held us for, we have the ability to make meaning in this space. And that's what we know about Abraham. The Sefer HaBahir, one of the earliest published mystical texts published in the 12th century, puts these words in the mouth of one of the divine attributes, the divine attribute of chesed, the divine attribute of grace and love and charity, and says of Abraham's death, which is actually, I think, in the next parsha, as long as Abraham was around, there was nothing for me to do because he did my work in my stead. And I sort of intimated this at the end of Gene's funeral. As long as Gene was around, he picked up a lot of the slack of what's required to build a Jewish community and a civic community. He was networked, he was devoted, he embraced and held up the Knoxville Jewish institutions, the civic life, the cultural life of our community. And in a way, now that he's gone, there is more slack for us to pick up. And that's not only true when Gene died, it was true when Leon died, it was true when Mindy died, it's true for any life well lived. That as long as the person was around, there's less for God to do. And I don't like to guilt people. That's not my style, my pastoral style. But I hope every now and again you feel the weight of what God put you here to do. And you feel the sense that since your time is limited, spend a little time watching TV, but don't fritter away too much of it. There is important work to be done, and I can't remember if it was Brad Artson saying this or quoting someone, but as long as God's not through with us, there's important work to be done. And the last piece I want to talk about of the parsha at the end of this very bad, no good week, it's a curse word that I wish I could use, but we can guess, just lousy week. It's something Reb Levi Yitzhak, one of the Hasidic masters, says of Avraham Avinu, of Abraham, our patriarch, our ancestor, that is no less true of Gene, was no less true of Mindy, is no less true of my Zeta, is no less true of the loved ones who have mentored and influenced us and shaped this community and other Jewish communities and Knoxville and East Tennessee and Tennessee and the United States and the great institutions and communities and nations of the world. To do that, to have that kind of leadership and impact, requires this, which is what Reb Levi Yitzhak says of Avram. Avram Avinu, with every one of his deeds, carried all of us in his heart and soul. I started the funeral by saying, Gene used to tease me, and I don't know what he felt. I know I loved him very deeply. But I think part of the reason we loved him and others that we have loved is the feeling that they carried us in their heart and soul at all times. It's sort of the difference between saying, my thoughts and prayers will be with you, and saying to someone, I've been thinking about you. To be carried by others in our community, to understand their lives as an act of grace and charity, to understand those before us as mentors and paradigms of what it meant to live in community and not as only as individuals. That's the greatest message, the greatest moral a life can have, I think.